Possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Earlier this year, back in the summer, the University of Illinois announced that this fall it would be allowing deer hunting in its Allerton Park. And for this reason, officials say that over the past few years, there has been a very significant increase in the number of deer in the park. That they're causing a lot of damage. There's concern about whether the environment can support their numbers. Some people are also concerned about the possibility of accidents involving cars. And the decision was made to allow for a limited period of time in the park hunting of the deer, starting at the end of October and scheduled to continue through the 24th of December. And it's a bow hunt. Hunters are allowed to go in with bow and arrow and kill deer. Some people are in the area here around the park, around Champaign-Urbana, have come out in opposition to the plan. And they have said that they're concerned about the means of hunt, that is the fact that it's going to be a hunt with bow and arrow. And they raise questions about whether the hunt is necessary, that is, whether there is indeed a problem with numbers of deer or not. So this morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll see if we can touch on some of these basic issues. And we have two guests. Here in studio with me is Richard Warner. He is professor of wildlife ecology at University of Illinois. He is also associate vice chancellor for research. Joining us by telephone is Patricia McElroy. She is research associate at the Humane Society of the United States. And as we talk, I'll try to ask some basic questions of the two guests. But of course, people who are listening are invited to call. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to be brief in their comments, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving and get in as many different people as possible. But of course, listeners are welcome to participate with questions, comments. Here in Champaign-Urbana, if you'd like to call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere the signal will travel, and that is 800-222-9455. So here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Professor Warner, thanks very much for being here.
Yes, David, thank you.
We appreciate your time. And here on the telephone is Patricia McElroy. Ms. McElroy, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
Let me ask as a first question. I'd like to start here with Professor Warner and to talk about the basic issue of how many deer we think there are in the park, and then what anybody's idea is about what is the optimum number of deer. So how many deer are there in Allerton?
And maybe I'll start by saying what makes this conversation so fascinating, David, is that variations on this theme are going on in many places of the country right now. There are at least 38 states that are indicating that they have serious deer problems, either in natural areas like this or perhaps in urban settings or whatever. So this is particularly germane for that reason. But Allerton and our view on Allerton and numbers of deer don't just start this year. We go back to the early 1980s, and during the 1980s, there was a study that is now a classic study done of deer in the Allerton Park area. How far do they move? What is their social structure? How long do they live? What do they eat? All these kinds of things. And that was published, and it was an award-winning monograph in the wildlife profession. And actually, Charles Nixon, the senior author, is a retired scientist in the Monticello area right now. That's significant because it pointed to something that we now believe is a problem many places nationally, and that is that the deer we call it the nutrition hypothesis, and that is that deer are spending a lot of time foraging on the surrounding agricultural areas, and yet they come into Allerton Park and also forage there and spend a considerable amount of time. We've observed that pattern of behavior now for two decades. And even as far back as the 1980s, we began to wonder, where's all this going? Beginning in 1981, we put into effect a helicopter count in the Allerton Park and surrounding environs where there are winter snow count conditions that are good. And so we have some bench line of estimating how many deer are in this area. The point that we're at now is that beginning in the mid-1990s, we began to see an increase in the number of deer. And the most recent count done in February of this past year indicated that in the 7,200 acres that is Allerton and surrounding, there were about 730 deer on the day that we counted them. And in Allerton proper, 1,500 acres, there were 383 deer. And that comes down to about 163 deer per square mile. Along with that, for a number of years, we have observed increasing damage to vegetation in Allerton Park and had increasing reports of problems in agricultural areas around Allerton Park, as well as collisions with vehicles. There are other kinds of deer counting that we have done as well that corroborate these kinds of things. But what we really were looking at a number of years ago was, what are we going to do if we reach some problem where we look like we have to intervene here because of what it's doing to the vegetation and other things? And we had hoped that we would not be at that point. But we decided that after the most recent helicopter count, we were at that point.
Mm. Well, let me here turn to Patricia McElroy and ask maybe a general question. And I don't know how familiar you are with the specific situation of Allerton Park. I imagine somewhat, since you've been asked to comment on that. But as Professor Warner says, this is not just a problem in central Illinois. It's a problem in a lot of other places. What is sort of is the position that, or does the Humane Society take a position on that issue when it comes to wildlife management and how it is various places? If people say they're having a problem with the numbers of deer, what they should do about it?
Well, the Humane Society of the United States understands that the deer population has greatly increased over this, especially the last 25, 30 years, because of the way that we have built up our suburban areas and torn down forests and made edge habitat for deer. We understand that deer are very adaptable. They will they fit in quite nicely into the suburban scene by using small forested areas for resting and then coming out and foraging on these lovely, delicious, fertilized plants that people put out, including food crops and azaleas and golf courses. And many deer are becoming great grass grazers, which, as I said before, they're very adaptable, and they can basically eat just about anything and survive and live also in higher densities than ever before. The state wildlife agencies back in the early 1900s were quite bright about bringing the deer back from almost extirpation in most of the lower 48. And unfortunately, I don't think that anybody considered our modern suburban sprawl as to what would happen with the deer population. And yes, it is a problem in especially in urban and suburban areas where there are high densities of deer in small areas. They do just fine in those areas. But the Humane Society of the United States does not feel that deer should be killed simply because they eat and are inconvenient.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me then turn back here to Professor Warner. And I think that people understand that there is a problem. It seems people understand there is a problem with the numbers of deer. So then the question is, okay, what do you do about this? And I know people have different ideas of what would be appropriate, mm-hmm. and they have raised questions about why it is that the university has decided to, as one strategy, use hunting. Why that? I mean, why did the university decide that for this limited period of time they would allow hunting?
Well, first of all, the goal of managing Allerton, or I should say the goals of managing Allerton Park are many. And one of those goals is to take an ecosystem approach and try and preserve a very precious and rare bottomland ecosystem that exists there. So in the ecosystem approach, the view that we're looking at deer here from a frame that we have to learn to live with deer. We're certainly not trying to extirpate deer from that area. But we want to adjust their numbers so that they're more in balance. And Patricia has made reference to this. I think it's extremely important to recognize that as we have altered our ecosystems, many of the original checks and balances are gone. And as we look at the ability of deer to increase in numbers, and we see no end to that in sight with their ability to forage on agricultural crops, Also, what they're doing in terms of damage-wise to plants, natural plants, as well as other ones on the site. We felt we had no choice but to intervene, and we decided to do this in sort of a research context. First of all, we're interested in rates of disease that we might see in the deer population there. We're also interested in learning more about their food habits and physiological condition, reproductive rates, all those kinds of things. So what we're doing right now is a very limited step to take deer off the area, and we're using a combination of hunting, archery hunting, and also sharpshooting that we plan to do in the winter months. It would be early in 05. Your specific question was, why hunting? First of all, and Patricia pointed to this as well, we have a wildlife management enterprise, the states and the federal government do, that we are unique from many countries in that wildlife is a publicly held trust. And we have agencies such as the Department of Natural Resources that are responsible for managing the wildlife populations that are non-migratory in this state. And we decided to work with them and come up with a plan that would begin to take very modest steps toward looking at what might come down the road for numbers of deer. A couple of things. First of all, we're trying to inform ourselves about our ability to manage the situation right now. This is a limited hunt. We have 12 weeks on board. We have, 12 hunters per week, 7 weeks. And we're not suggesting that we're solving this problem in this current year. What we're trying to do is look at our own ability to manage a very limited hunt like this, look at how the hunters perform, look at what happens in terms of the numbers of deer that are taken. The same thing with our very limited maximum of 25 deer that will be taken by sharpshooting. Stand back and look at those two events and say, how many resources did they take to pull them off? What was our success rate? What kinds of problems did we have? And where from here? So these are very small and cautious steps that will allow us to test our ability to manage and to bring these tools to play in what will probably be a sustained problem on that particular area.
Well, given that fact, I mean, and given that the number of animals that you're expecting to be killed is relatively small compared to the overall problem, it's not going to solve the problem.
That's correct.
How when the hunt is over, when the bow hunt part, and then you're going to have a sharpshooter go and use a gun and shoot some more animals, how will you determine whether or not this has been a success?
Well, I think the short-term measures of has it been a success will speak to how effective hunters are in the area. Have we had problems? The same thing for the sharpshooting. And it will allow us to take a look at those and say, what might these particular tools help us address as we go on from here? There are other parts of this that are important, too. We're looking at every animal in terms of what the prevalence of certain diseases are. We're concerned with an animal population in that high a density that we could begin to have diseases that both impact deer, domestic animals, and humans. And what we learn about disease prevalence will also say something about where we might go from here as well.
I have a couple of callers I want to get to, but again, I want to go back to Patricia McElroy. Given the fact that you have acknowledged, we've sort of all acknowledged the fact that here and a lot of the places there is a problem with the number of deer. And if you take a position that says you really would like to use other than lethal means to take care of the problem, then the question is, how do you do that? And given the scope of the problem, do you still find yourself having to kill some animals because there are so many of them?
Well, the Humane Society of the United States feels that if indeed lethal means need to be used to lower a population due to livelihood issues or other issues that are important to the community, that the last type of lethal reduction should be bow hunting, because bow hunting is among the cruelest forms of hunting. And even if a well-placed arrow can kill a deer quickly, most arrows are not that well-placed. Bow hunters routinely spend hours tracking blood trails of deer struck by arrows before the animals finally bleed to death. In a recent South Carolina bow hunt study, two-thirds of the deer killed did not fall in sight of the archers, all of whom were experienced hunters shooting from tree stands that were placed over corn feeders. Moreover, three decades of research tell us that when a wounded, that for every one or two deer struck by an arrow, only one is retrieved by the bow hunters. So that means another animal disappears. I understand that this is going to be a managed hunt. However, on the other hand, too, bow hunts are not efficient enough to significantly reduce any large urban deer populations. Oak Mountain State Park, Alabama, last year had a bow hunt in their state park. It's a similar situation to Allerton Park. They had 70 bow hunters to try to kill 200 deer, and they managed to get 27 deer in the 2 days. Later, they had sharpshooters. This year, they're doing two hunts, two bow hunts, and then they've already had the first hunt, and they got 20 deer in 2 days. So we feel that if they are going to use lethal means to reduce the herd, that they should use sharpshooting and not even try to call a bow hunt a management hunt. It's just a thinly veiled recreational opportunity for local hunters.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to the issue of alternatives to hunting. And again, I have two people here who are waiting, and I promise I don't want to keep them waiting too much longer.
Oh, okay.
But let me just return real quick here with Professor Warner to the issue of the bow hunt, because it seems that of the people there are some people clearly who wouldn't want lethal means used no matter what the means. But then there are some people who say, well, okay, if you have to do that, then the deer should be killed in the most humane manner possible, which they say would be using a rifle, not the bow. Why is it that the decision was made for this initial part of the hunt where you're going to let some number of hunters go in? Why a bow hunt?
Pure and simple, a couple things come into play here. First of all, while sharpshooting is attractive in a lot of settings, it's very expensive, and the preponderance of states believe that some pressure brought to bear by sport hunting is going to be important here in the long term. And certainly the Department of Natural Resources in Illinois feels that way, and that is the standard approach that they take to this. And we don't have the latitude to go in here and just take out X hundred number of deer or whatever it is by sharpshooting. We're playing within the confines of how these particular situations are addressed in Illinois. Secondly, regarding bow hunting per se, while there are the kinds of stories that Patricia mentioned out here, there are other sides of this as well. There has been a number of studies. One of the most carefully done studies in the United States was in Minnesota recently. 87% of the deer were recovered by hunters. Of those that were not recovered, about half of them by individual hunter, another hunter recovered them. We had hopes that if we managed this hunt very carefully, we would be toward the high end of killing animals effectively and efficiently. We believe we are achieving that at this point. We're almost halfway through this hunt right now. Our indications are that approximately 90% of these animals have been shot and recovered by hunters. We're not seeing the kinds of prolonged stories of tracking deer for days or whatever. Yes, deer can run. There can be a tracking event that occurs. But we believe that the hunters that are involved here understand that this is not just a recreational event, but they're trying to help us manage the situation, and we need to be careful about how we do that in terms of accuracy, the shots that are taken, the follow-up activities that are in place. And we believe that we are pointing to a fairly efficient hunt. And let me point out the alternatives. While we talk a lot about sharpshooting, it's very expensive. Iowa City has been paying $100,000 a year to remove deer, and they're about to give up. And there's at least serious talk to going to bow hunting. Many, many municipalities are moving toward bow hunting, including a serious discussion in Cook and Lake County. The reasons being that sharpshooting is not easy either, and it is not 100% as well, and neither is hunting by the gun and using sport hunting in that way. If we have an archery hunt that is pressing 88, 90% in terms of recovering animals, that's not a lot different than what we're going to see by a gun hunt.
I want to, again, I have callers here, but just real quick, sure. I guess, Ms. McElroy, anything you would want to respond to from what Professor Warner just said?
Yes, I just feel that talking about expense over humaneness is not something that the Humane Society of the United States could agree with. The fact is they're going to bow hunt and allow them to take antlered deer after they've taken an antlerless deer, which to me shows that this is really just a recreational opportunity for hunters, because if they really want to reduce the population, they will make it antlerless only or doe only.
Okay. Well, I have some callers who have been here waiting patiently. I'd like to bring them into the conversation. Let's start. We have someone in Homer, and this would be line number one. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm visiting my son in Homer. I'm from New Jersey, and deer there are one of the bane of my existence. I can tell you what happens if the problem goes beyond what you have locally. In 2002, our township came up with a helicopter population count of about 225 per square mile. As to how commonplace, for the last 2 years around Memorial Day, I've been able to pet newborn fawns, one in the lawn, one just outside of it. Here's a concern, though. There are 460 vehicular accidents in the past 12 months for a township of about 16,000. Now, that's approaching a pretty good percentage. The vehicular damage can run, on average, $2,500, $3,000 per accident, unless it's just a swipe collision. In addition, there's a risk of death. There are a few of those where it comes through the windshield, either kicking or just dead weight. My question, I guess, is that, one other problem we have is that undergrowth, new growth in the forest is just about eliminated from foraging and use of small trees as velvet removal of the antlers. I don't see any solution other than something like chronic wasting disease coming when the population density is so great that it becomes a very communicable form of infection.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question I have for the professor, the game biologist, what is the likelihood that chronic wasting disease will blossom and move east, and for the Humane Society person, at what point do you consider risk of injury to humans a problem that is of concern and must be dealt with?
Okay. Well, there's a couple of questions. We'll take them as the caller asked them. You want to talk about chronic wasting disease?
And just to finish off, implicit in the archery hunt here is the fact that it's a safe hunt. And that's very important in Ellerton Park in terms of trying to use the park for other purposes or parts of the park. And that was very attractive to us from the safety standpoint. Caller mentions an interesting point. And just last week in USA Today, they reviewed deer and wildlife vehicular collisions. Right now, we're going at $1.5 billion in reported damage. And there are many studies that indicate that maybe half of the deer vehicle collisions are being reported. Since 1991, deer vehicular collisions have increased about 30%. So it is a real issue. In Illinois, the very latest statistics show that about 25,000 vehicle collisions are going on. And think about that. If indeed only half of them are being reported, what if there are 50,000 citizens that are encountering deer through their windshield, so to speak? It's an interesting perspective. In terms of chronic wasting disease, the interesting thing about Ellerton Park and areas like this is that disease comes in, some forms of disease come in quickly when physiological condition is compromised. The physiological condition of these deer are fantastic. They are corn-fed, so to speak, and we don't look for that to change over time. However, diseases like chronic wasting disease are not a function, probably, so much of physiological condition as the number of animals that are packed in. We now have chronic wasting disease in Illinois. We have at least 60 animals that have been shown positive north of Rockford. We have animals that have been shown to move as far as Ellerton Park in the Chicago area, as far as Chicago into Milwaukee, and vice versa. I would say it is a matter of time before chronic wasting disease becomes at least more common than it is now. And frankly, I can't tell you what the implications of that are. Society is concerned because it looks a lot like mad cow disease. Is a protein, a prion, that is, that has gone awry, and we don't understand much about how it is spread. And there are certainly some worries about what that can do to both the health of the deer herd and perhaps implications to humans as well, although that has not been proven. Nonetheless, there are a number of diseases, and I would also mention the importance of deer for Lyme disease as a main host for the deer tick, and we're now seeing evidence of the deer tick in Allerton, and we're seeing clear evidence of the spread of deer tick in Illinois. And that's another real concern in terms of the deer herd.
Mm. Let me again here turn to Patricia McElroy. You can certainly respond to any of the points that the caller raised. I guess, and I'm certainly interested in getting back to the question that I asked a little earlier about if you're not going to use hunting to try to control the deer numbers, then what do you do?
Well, let me respond to what Professor Warner was talking about far as the chronic wasting disease. He's absolutely right. There are really more questions about the disease than there are answers, and they're changing all the time. And I'm sorry that you have chronic wasting disease in Illinois. I had read that, but I didn't know for sure. It is truly a shame because it's very scary because most people don't understand it. Vehicle car collisions are absolutely horrible, and especially we find it more so in the East where people drive like maniacs, including me. We do try to put up signage. We are working on things like having motion sensor signs with bright flashing lights, trying to get fencing reinforced along roads and turnpikes. I know New Jersey has some of the streeter reflectors up, but I did notice last time I was driving up there that they weren't very well maintained, which means that they're not going to work. People really do need to change their driving habits. I know it sounds ridiculous, but we did it with seatbelts. We are never going to have as few deer as we had 20, 25 years ago. The deer population is going to stay high no matter how many are killed. We need to take charge of the situation and start doing something proactive to keep the deer off the roads and to get people to drive carefully when deer are most active.
Well, do you see anything... any viable strategies, though? Again, you said you thought maybe there wouldn't be very much we could do about the deer numbers, but is there anything that you think could be done any way that people who are involved in wildlife management can somehow intervene and try to reduce, over time, to reduce the total deer population?
Well, there's some experiments going on out there. I've been involved in one of them, on using immunocontraception in small deer populations or small areas. However, because most areas where deer are habituated are adjacent to lands where deer can be hunted, and it's not a viable tool at this point because we have to tag each animal, and it would have to be, shown that the deer was not good for consumption. And except, even though does have a very small home range, maybe about a half a mile, it's not practical for us to suggest immunocontraception. The reason that we suggest we are against bow hunting is that it is a slow process, it's not efficient, and that we feel if they're going to really drastically reduce a deer herd, then they should do a bait and shoot with professionals.
We're getting really close to, in fact, we're past the midpoint here, and I want to do two things. I want to introduce again our guests and get back to some callers because I have one who's been waiting quite a while. Our guest, you don't need to apologize. I don't. That's not a criticism of either guest, because I want to give each of you a chance to respond to the issues, and some of them are fairly complicated. So I'll take full responsibility for making the callers wait. Our guests are on the telephone, Patricia McElroy, Research Associate at the Humane Society U.S.
Yeah, I'm a biologist as well.
Indeed. And Professor Richard Warner, he's Professor of Wildlife Ecology here at University of Illinois. Let's go to Belgium here, in a nearby community, and talk with the caller. This is our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning, all. I live on a stream that's on the Vermilion Watershed, which is on the Indiana-Illinois border. And I regularly see 10, 15 deer in my front yard. I've had them run into the side of my car, the side of my house. They're just thick. As thick as they can possibly be. They're probably the only species that seems to really be benefiting from all these deer are the turkey vultures that seem to be eating the carcasses from the roadkill that we seem to have multitude of around in this area, because there's really a lot of them, because we have a ground that's very similar to Allerton Park, because it's the Sangamon River, and this is the Vermilion River, is very, very similar in characteristics. We just can't seem to get rid of them fast enough, to be completely honest, because they're just an absolute nuisance. In that, I've had rutting deer in my front yard. It's just, and I don't live way out in the woods. I live fairly close to town. I can only heartily recommend what the biologist says, that your professor there says about removing them from Allerton, because as the previous caller said, they destroy the understory, get rid of all the habitat for small birds and animals that are underneath, that live in the lower area of the woods. If it's a humane thing, I almost think it's almost humane to kill them, because there's just so many of them in our particular area.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the comment. I want to get back to one question here real quick, and again, and then perhaps go on to some other callers, about the possibility of, over the long term, as a method of trying to control the deer population, the issue of contraception that Patricia McElroy brought up. I think in a lot of people's minds, that would be ideal if you could somehow control the fertility of the deer. You might still have to have some hunting, but then you, over time, you could get the deer populations down to the size that we consider more optimal. As she says, there has been some research. I don't know how well this has worked. How reasonable is it to expect, as a long-term strategy, that might be something you could do?
Well, it does work quite well. There's some peer-reviewed papers that have come out, published in the Wildlife Society Bulletin, about Fire Island National Seashore and the National Institute of Standards and Technology. We're talking about an island, and we're talking about a campus that is enclosed in fencing, although it is not completely enclosed. We have gotten the fawn population, the recruitment of fawns, down to about a third, and that's with using control. So we certainly don't contracept everybody. Mm-hmm. But as again I said, this is a research project that we're working on. It does work, but it takes a long time. The downside or the upside, however you look at it, from whichever point of view you're coming, is that the deer tend to live longer because they're much healthier, because they're not having fawns every year. So, a deer, if a life expectancy is 10 years on a doe, it may be 12, 13 years on a doe that doesn't have fawns every year. It is, if it were to be used, it would be used only in heavily, densely populated urban and suburban areas only. That would be the only use it would have. And it would be a great solution to a problem. And, I know that White Buffalo, Tony DiNicola, has done some experiments where he's worked with contraception after doing a sharpshoot. And so he gets the initial deer population down and then goes on and uses contraception.
Well, let me ask you this here in studio, the Professor Warner, sort of the same question. I mean, what do you see as the possibility of doing this? And is this really something you could expect to work best, where your populations of deer are really geographically confined in a small area?
Sure. And by the way, you've probably gathered this, David. I'm not speaking for the University of Illinois this morning. I'm speaking in terms of my perspective as a scientist here. But I look at Ellerton Park as a real opportunity to develop and evaluate a number of tools that we ought to have in the toolbox that will help society manage these problems in a lot of different settings. And so that's sort of a philosophical bent that at least I have related to this. And in the context of a systems approach, many tools in the toolbox, some of them more appropriate for one setting than another, contraceptives should be looked at. No question about it. And I think Pat has very well summarized the issues. It's most difficult to think about in an open population like Ellerton Park. But on the other hand, there have been some limited successes right now where they are fenced in or very small, non-open populations where you can gain access to virtually all of the animals because you still have to dart gun them or whatever. So I think it is one of the tools. And if you think about the discussion we just had about transportation, 2.8 billion vehicle miles are being registered on 4 million miles of roadways in the United States right now in the lower 48. And clearly, there is going to have to be some of the things that Pat referred to in terms of changing driving habits, new technologies, or whatever. So as we look at the deer problem nationally, this has to be a systems approach. We need to learn to live with deer using different tools in different settings and to some extent, changing our behavior and our attitude about this as well.
Okay, let's talk with some other folks. We have somebody here on cell phone, line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I grew up in Wisconsin, or I lived in Wisconsin in the late as a child and teenager in the late 70s and early to mid 80s, where the problem with deer was maybe 10 years ahead of it the way it was in Illinois. When I moved to Chicago and then down here later on. And my father had totaled at least one car, possibly two, on deer, and he is not a reckless driver. There's just that many of them there. And if you drive a lot of miles, then this will happen. Now, there's a lot of deer hunting in Wisconsin, but from what I understand, even it doesn't control them. So there's hold on a second. I'm on the phone. Sorry about that. Anyway, I think something sort of serious is needs to be done, and it seems to me that one of the big arguments about the Ellerton issue is the means by which it's done. So if I'm catching you right, the issue is whether a professional hunt is used versus essentially an amateur one. Is that correct?
I don't know. Is that correct?
Involving sport hunters or involving a professional to come in there and cull them, yes. At least, again, both of these are very limited measures as we're doing them right now so that we can learn about their potential role down the road.
And the idea is that both things are going to happen. Initially, yes. It's going to be sport hunters. It's going on now. We started October 31st. We'll go to December 24th. And then the plan is then next year to have a professional hunter go in there with rifle and to take out some more
exactly.
animals. So you're doing both.
And we're doing both, and we'll learn some things in that winter sample we won't learn from the fall. But at any rate, so both of those, ranging from using sport hunting and people who are archers as well as professional, correct.
And then the Humane Society's objection is essentially an objection to bow hunting, or am I incorrect on that too?
We object to the use of bow hunting as and calling it a managerial tool, yes.
Okay. Well, anyway, I mean, I guess I just want to... There was a big debate about this when I moved into Chicago, this very same issue in the forest preserves. And so it may well be... I don't remember how it was resolved at all, but it may well be that some useful precedents are available for how these things are handled. I don't know. But as I said, I do remember when I moved to the Chicago area that there was this exact same problem and huge debate about it. So I guess hopefully we in Central Illinois can learn from the experience if there's anything to learn from them, of people further north where there's more been more of this problem earlier on.
And by the way, a number of University of Illinois graduate students have studied the deer problem and the ecology of it in the Chicago area, and we have benefited from what we've learned there in terms of thinking about Allerton.
You know, and I just wanted to comment, I'm sorry, caller, that I think the Allerton deer population sounds like prime research ground for all sorts of studies. I would love to get in there.
I think you're right, Pat. This is a real opportunity for us to look at these tools as time goes on.
Well, again, I want to thank the caller. We're moving into about our last 10, 12 minutes. We have two other callers on hold. I'd like to try to get them in. So we'll go next to someone in Urbana in line three. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to ask three questions, and then I'll just listen on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Question one, what's wrong with recreational opportunities for bow hunters? Question two, is it feasible to have some kind of, marksmanship tests administered at the local sheriff's station or something like that? And then question three is there any danger posed to local residential areas from hunting with high-powered rifles? And I'll listen on the radio.
Okay. I guess maybe let me pitch the first one, particularly to Patricia McElroy. What's wrong with some giving the opportunities for recreational bow hunting?
The Humane Society of the United States, for whom I'm speaking, feels that bow hunting is cruel and inhumane as weapons go. I understand that animals can be wounded by guns just as easily as they can bows, arrows. However, if in fact you're calling it a managed hunt to lower the population for ecological reasons, then I don't think you should use bows and arrows and try to call it a managed hunt, because it just, besides being inhumane, is simply not as efficient as gun hunting or bait and shoot.
For this other, I think for a lot of people, again, the issue has to do with if you're going to use lethal means, gun versus the bow.
Should be done as quickly as possible and as humanely as possible.
Well, I don't know that about the question that the caller raises about, having somebody demonstrate their skill with the bow before we'll let them do it. We don't do that with people who hunt with guns. So I'm not sure how popular such a thing would be. I'm not even sure how feasible such a thing would be. I'm not sure that there's, for people who have concerns about the bow, and here I'm looking at the professor, I'm not sure that there's anything we could do for those people to make them feel better about the bow hunt other than saying we won't have one.
Well, my view on where archery hunters have been involved in a managed, closely watched situation is that they step up to the plate and they are unusually careful with their shots and highly efficient. And we were hoping that we would see that in this particular setting. And by the way, we're talking to each one of them individually before the hunt, during the hunt, after the hunt. They are being encouraged and they're spending a lot of their time, hundreds of dollars. We decided not to impose something like prove that you're a good shot, unless we saw some evidence early in the hunt that we needed to do that, and we're not seeing that. We're seeing one arrow kills. We're seeing a very high percent of recovery. Certainly, it could be done. It would be complicated, but I think that we wouldn't want to impose that unless we had good reason to believe it was needed. And I'll just follow up with the third question that the caller had about dangers. Absolutely, there are dangers when bullets fly in an area, and it's one of the reasons that archery, given its extremely high safety in terms of humans being, I guess I could turn it around, not hurt by this, was attractive to us.
How many hunters so far have participated in the hunt?
Well, we have had 3 weeks, and we've had 24 hunters involved in those 3 weeks. And thus far, at the end of the week, we're not hunting this week, as a matter of fact, because shotgun season is going on, not on Allerton, but in that region. And we just decided not to have our hunt at the same time. We, at this point, have taken about either 57 or 58 animals. 11 of those have been bucks at this point.
Mm-hmm. And the idea is that what you're wanting to do is, if you're saying to people, you're going to go out there and hunt, the first animal you shoot should be a female.
Absolutely.
Deer.
So the implication of this is that 15% of the hunters that we've had in the first 3 weeks have been able to go on and get a buck. And there have been other places where hunters have been invited to participate by archery and go on, said, just go shoot a doe. And this is an incentive for them to stay involved in many days and help us take more deer off. But it is done in the frame of this being a recreational sport hunting tool.
Let's talk with someone else. Next caller up is also Urbana. This would be, I believe, line number one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I understand that the scope of the discussion has to do with bow hunting in Allerton and how to control that deer population. But when I hear people calling and talking about the deer problem, it really seems that we need a larger context to understand why it is we have a deer problem. And I think part of the problem is really a human problem and a human development problem, and how the patterns of our development have encroached on the habitats of these deer and have put things out of balance, that they're no longer natural predators. I mean, we wouldn't have these problems of deers crashing through people's lawns if we didn't have the problem of sprawl and, you know, subdivisions moving further and further out. I mean, people want to be close to nature, but then they complain when nature crashes into their front yard or in their window. And, you know, we wouldn't have problems of deer on the roads if we wouldn't build so many roads. I mean, the problem is being out of balance. And so we're talking about this deer problem in such a narrow context and narrow scope, like deer are the problem, when I think part of it is how we conceive our relationship to nature and how we develop is the problem.
Well, I expect probably both guests would agree.
I certainly agree, yeah. And I appreciate that helpful context. You are so right. In this case, however, it is not only encroaching on deer habitat, but it is deer adjusting their behavior and how they relate to this landscape. And the unfortunate part about this, I would agree with you that we're the main problem here, but it is a problem. And one of the challenges that we face when we have ecosystems that are way out of whack, we don't have all the natural checks and balances, or nature can be a cruel taskmaster and we're not willing to allow nature to kick in ways that it might, is that we have to figure out ways to solve the problem.
Yes, I agree, Professor. And I've been studying deer out in the field, I like to say up close and personal, for about 8 years now. And it amazes me, as you said before, that the deer are adjusting themselves to our way of life. And it is amazing to me how adaptable deer are and what they will do to survive. There is one of the places that I work with deer. There is no understory. It is the classic browse line, and these animals are quite fit and healthy, albeit smaller than, say, deer in a heavily forested area, surviving on grass and any fertilized plantings that are put out there. This campus has literally put native grasses in instead of the usual azaleas and things to try to discourage them from eating.
And Pat, you're right. And as these deer adjust and behave in different ways in different places, it just makes the long view of this and how we handle the problem even more complex.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
All right. Let's talk again with another caller. This is also someone in Urbana, and it's line number two.
Is that
Hello?
Me?
Yes.
Hello. Well, I want to question not how the deer are killed, but where they're killed. I'm a disgruntled Southside Allerton hiker. And I understand that all the deer damage is on the north side of the river. The hiking on the north side isn't nearly as nice as it is on the south side. And I don't know why you don't have your hunt on the north side instead of the south side, since that seems to be where the damage is.
Well, a couple of observations on that. First of all, deer are more fluid than you might think in Allerton. Those deer that we find in the south area do get in the north area. They have much larger home ranges than so anywhere where we can get to them, that is of help. Secondly, there's already a hunt going on bordering the Allerton Park area. This is the second year, I believe, the Department of Natural Resources acquired some new land. And so it was already underway, and we thought this would be the least disruptive way of doing this. But, you know, the point well taken. We understand that it is disruptive, and that's something we'll take a look at.
Well, if you hunt them only on the south side, but you're not hunting them on the north side, as the signs out there
that's
say.
Correct.
And if you're hunting them only on the south side, then it seems to me they're going to go to the north side and escape the hunters.
They will. They you're absolutely right. And virtually anywhere in a small protected place like this where hunting comes on the scene, deer learn where they're not being pursued.
Yes.
So what this means is that our efficiency will go down as the weeks go on here because deer are fully able to learn that. So
yeah, well, just to reinforce that point, as a frequent hiker out there, I've noticed that during hunting season, I see a lot more in the past. I've seen a lot more deer in the park than I do during non-hunting season, and that's because during hunting season,
absolutely,
they know to go into the park where they won't get killed.
Yeah, no, you're right. But to contemplate shutting all of Allerton Park down, having the entire facility hunted, is just not something that we were ready to do at this point. But you make a good observation.
Well, but just in terms of the details, does this mean that once I was planning a big hike on Christmas Day because the sign said that the hunt was over on December 24th. Now, does this mean that I can only have a very narrow window in there to hike because in January you're going to start with a sharpshooting?
We haven't set a time. Our sharpshooting will be partly weather dependent, and we're likely to do that in a very focused way in the middle of night over bait, and we're hoping this will not interrupt any of the normal recreational activities that go there.
Okay. So I can still plan my Christmas Day hike.
Absolutely, okay. And I hope it's a wonderful day for it.
All right,
I promise
you
one thing, you'll see deer.
Right. Well, thanks for the call. We've got to stop, and I'm sorry, we've just used our time. Will the university, will they make it known when the sharpshooters are going to be out there in the park?
I don't have an answer to that. We certainly will be talking to the public about this, but I just don't know the answer to that. We're going to get through the hunt, and then we're going to sit down and talk about planning and logistics for the winter.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop, and perhaps at some future point we should say we'll get back to this larger question of wildlife management, because it's one for us here, it's one for a lot of other people, and it's complicated. But for the moment, we'll have to leave it there. Ms. McElroy, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show. But it was nice talking to you, Professor Warner.
And Pat, likewise. Thanks for your good work on this.
Thank you. You too.
Patricia McElroy, she's a biologist and research associate at the Humane Society of the United States, and here in the studio with us, Richard Warner. He's professor of wildlife ecology. He's also associate vice chancellor for research at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. And thank you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Programming here on our show, made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. The program also made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Classes ongoing. Individuals can start anytime. For more information, call 384-5829 or visit their website at www.livingyogacenter.net. In the next part of the program, we'll be talking with Dr. William Thomas. He's a physician. He's board certified in family medicine and geriatrics, and we'll be talking about a book that looks at our attitudes on aging. It's titled, What Are Old People For? How Elders Will Save the World. That's in the next hour. Right now, though, we're going to break for an update on the market, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of